Do you want to see a new illusion I've been working on?
Sure.
Awesome. Let me get my hamster.
Our hamster!
How do we feel about this whole magic thing? Middle school kids can be so mean.
All I know is David Blaine is pretty hot.
Yeah, but for every David Blaine, there's a Carrot Top.
I hate carrots.
Me too.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, it's Jonathan Burns.
Hi.
I'm holding for applause. I really want to add an applause sound effect right now.
sure.
Thank you for doing this free podcast. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'm just realizing it's free now.
Yeah, I always make that joke up top, and I'm sure listeners are sick of it, but it really like takes people back, the guests back for a second.
What? Yeah.
Wait, I'm
getting, shocked.
I'll give you, we have free water and crappy coffee in my lobby of... the place I live, which is right over there.
All right. Well, I'll take you up on that.
Mm-hmm. It's you get powdered half and half. Which is, you know, it's always quality when they give you powdered half and
half. That's right.
So you're in town. You're visiting. You're doing all the shows this week. You live in Pennsylvania?
I do. Mm-hmm. I live in Amish country. I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
What's that like? How do you balance? Because I am envious of that. I would love to just go home to Michigan, live with my, where all my friends growing up from high school are, and my family.
Where you can afford stuff.
Where you can afford stuff. Yes. Oh, my God. Don't even get me started. We were trying to get approved. We did get approved for a mortgage to buy something out here, but it's like a third of what we need, you know. But in any other state, you can buy a mansion.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, going back to you, I'll stop making this about me because I'm so selfish. How do you balance that? Because you do a lot of travel, but you also have kids and a wife.
Yes.
And you're a young dude.
Well, thank you. My goodness, so flattering. I can't wait for that coffee. it's hard. Like there is a definite balance. I come out here and I try to make things happen here, but also it's nice to have a place I can afford and be in. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the road a lot too, so it's hard to justify uprooting everyone and being like, let's go follow daddy's dream in Los Angeles. So I feel like I'm in a different place. You don't have kids, so that's a whole different thing too. So
I have two dogs that we treat like children.
Okay,
but it's not the
Sorry.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's.
I know people with kids get really angry when you say that.
No. I know that is a responsibility in its own. But you don't have to send them to kindergarten and
totally.
School and things. So.
Yeah.
So if something would draw me out here, I would love to be near palm trees in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But where we live too, we have a nice, comfortable life, and it's a great place to raise a family. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, just trying to find that balance. I'm always constantly struggling in my mind. I'm like, should I be in a big city
sure.
or should I be doing things? And I just try to pop in and do my things there and shake hands and meet with people, do podcasts.
Oh, like this one.
Yes, exactly. So to get it out there to the world.
Shameless free promotion.
Now the world will know all about me.
All three of our listeners are going to be like, that guy, that Jonathan Burns is going somewhere.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad. Thank you, listeners. Sheila, Daryl, and Hannah.
I want to give we just got a donation from a Mr. King. And this is not even a joke. We got a legit donation on the podcast website.
Wow.
So I just want to say thank you for that. That's very nice. People listen and actually donate. So if you like the podcast, and this is, I'm bringing it back to me.
Sure. I'd like to learn about you as well.
This is really just a therapy session for me to talk about myself.
Well, then I don't have to listen to the podcast. I'll know. I'll learn.
You'd
my
be
own
like
things
the rest
you.
Of the world. It's great.
I could be number four, but probably not.
But if you like the podcast, go to twomagiciansonemic.com and donate. I always forget to say that in, so you triggered my memory.
Wow, wonderful. Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. King. Not Elvis, a different
King. Oh, okay.
King.
Gotcha. It's a Nigerian king. You actually have to send him money back.
I sent him about $5,000. He sent $20 back, and he said the rest is coming in installments.
Oh, well, that seems legitimate.
Mm-hmm. He said he wasn't going to give away my Chase bank account at all. Anyway, back to you. You've done all the television. You've done the Late Late Show. You've done the Fool Us. Have you done the America's Got Talent too?
No, I did Francis Got Talent.
Oh yes, that was
a year or two ago. That was sort of my dipping my toe into the Got Talent.
How did
ring.
You get in Francis Got Talent? Because I'm not breaking any rule. You're not French.
I know your listeners can't tell from the accent, but
you do look a little French.
Oh,
it's the glasses.
Merci. They had reached out to me, and I was like, okay. Like, it was one of those, they just kind of asked, and I said, sure. And I was like, I don't speak French. Is that a problem? And they said, no, not a problem. Yeah. And I did an act that was to music. So it's usually my finale trick. I broke it up into two parts. So I just did the first part as my audition. And then I did the, I was back for the semifinals. They only have three rounds in France's Got Talent. Yeah,
get to the point. They're efficient in
France.
That's
right. Keep it snappy.
And they're off for like a month. They take a month break in
between
filming. That's
right. And so many baguettes behind
the scenes. Everybody's skinny. What the hell?
Exactly. Well, that's I fit in. So that could be why you thought I was French.
Yeah.
But it was great. Like it worked out really well, and it was fun. Mm-hmm. I got to fly to Paris and do stuff there. And then because of that, too, I also invited to do the Montreal Comedy Festival.
Oh, cool.
So I was there last summer, and I did, like, the French portion, and it was très magnifique. That's French.
That's French.
It's French for
one
more baguette, please.
Uno more baguette, please.
Wait.
That's funny. And you also did the Fool Us.
Yes.
And your Fool Us appearance is hands down my favorite that I've ever seen on there.
Thank you.
I'm not going to ruin any of the bits, but if you haven't seen Jonathan Burns on The Fool Us, please watch it. It's hilarious.
Well, thank you.
And turns the show up upside down, I think, in a good way.
Yeah, going into it, I sort of knew I wasn't going to fool them. Sorry if you haven't, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it. But
no, he fools them.
Yeah, that's right. So I was more like, I'm going to go on there and be entertaining because I do magic. I started in magic, but now my show is a comedy show, and there's variety elements.
Which is smarter because you've expanded into a whole other universe, I think.
Yeah, and I think also at some point I realized I'm not a great magician. And I can, if I write jokes, I'm better there. So
see, I've realized I'm not a great magician. I just continued. I'm not selfless like you are.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I'm gonna be like a knuckle busting, you know, sleight of hand guy. So I just wrote jokes, and now my goal is to be as funny as possible.
Yes, but you're tapping into something that more people care about. People respect amazing skill with magic, but they really connect and care about being entertained and laughing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because since I've gotten more comedy than magic, I'm always surprised when people are shocked by magic. Like, I mean, I love it too. Like, I like seeing it. I kind of forget that that's what people do like do like magic, and I like magic too. But I just forget. I sometimes know too much, so I'm watching things as a.
I forget that all the time, too. Before I moved to L.A., I just assumed everybody just kind of universally hated magic. And
I don't know why.
Has a stereotype of a guy in a top hat and a cape and having a rabbit.
Yeah.
But you get to L.A. and people are just immediately asking, do you perform at the castle? Can you get me into it? People I don't even know are like, can you get me into the castle?
Sure, yeah.
They want to see. They know that good magic exists, and they want to see it. So I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, actually, that first time I worked at the castle, they had warned me, oh, you might get emails and messages from people trying to get tickets. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen in my head. But then I got, like, dozens of emails and, like, I'm in town. Like, all these different stories of, I'm in town, and my sister's here. And
I got a man who called. I did it 3 weeks ago, and a man called me. Claiming it was his anniversary or something, and I'm like, I can't help you out, dude. I've never gotten called before, and it was weird.
Yeah.
It's like, do you call the band when you can't get into a show?
Yeah,
like,
right.
That's not an egotistical statement. That's just like weird to be calling the performer to get into a venue. Yeah. But I told him, no, I'm sorry, man, I can't help you out. I don't have any guest passes, and I just don't give out passes to people I don't know personally, professionally.
Sure.
It's just, you know.
That man's name, Mr. King.
Mr. King. That's why he donated $20.
He's trying to get in that way. Through your pocket.
And next time he will get into the castle. but then he proceeded to start like whining. He's like, oh, is there anything you can do? I was like, dude, okay, I'm hanging up now because this is creepy and weird.
Yeah, it's just a weird, like, it's. They all feel like lies too. Like all these stories like seem made up, but
the times I've fallen for it, my first time at the week at the castle, I think I gave a few out. Nobody came up and said, hey, thank you for, like, at the theater. Nobody said thank you for the passes. Nobody followed up with an email or anything like that. I'm like, all right, this is definitely a giant scam. And they're just, because there's things on Google that say, if you want to get into the castle, just message all the magicians that are working that week. That's
okay,
why
that's
they
what
do
it
that.
Is. Okay, yeah, it was just such a weird experience. Like, I knew it's a mysterious place and people want to go there, but I did not expect so many messages.
It's a weird thing. So we also do the cruise ships together. You're on the Disney as well.
We've never been on together, though.
We were so close. I got off when 2 weeks ago, Wednesday, on the Fantasy, and you were getting on, I think, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Just missed each other.
The worst. Bummer.
I wonder if they would ever actually book us together, because if you do some magic in your show.
Well, I work with, like, Sean Farquhar sometimes.
Oh, so then you're, he does way more magic than I do.
Justino, I've been with him.
Okay, I don't know.
He does, like, an illusions.
Mm.
I don't know why I have to say it like that.
You have to.
I'm required.
The trick is a whore, something does for money. Famous quote, and it's true.
It is very true. I hope we are, because every once in a while it works out. Like, we were talking about Marcus Monroe earlier, a mutual friend.
Yeah.
And when I'm on with friends, it's really nice to have people there to hang out with.
And going back to the compliment, I gave this compliment to Marcus, to his face, and I'll give it to your face too, that your style of comedy and performance feels almost alt comedy and feels like it shouldn't be working for touristy audiences. And I say that as a compliment because they're sometimes tricky and they don't see a lot of entertainment. But you guys both are killing on those ships, and that makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's I kind of do myself, and I'm kind of like, this is what I have to offer.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And I kind of live in that awkward comedy world.
Which is a wonderful place to be.
Thanks. Yeah, and just try to be audience interactive. So I was a little nervous working with Disney for the first time and trying to, because I've heard stories of people like being hired and fired very quickly making certain comments or just saying something to somebody who's leaving the room, like, where are you going, sir? And then they're like, you can't talk to the audience. And what? Like, so there's a handbook and rules that I wasn't aware of.
In my experience, it really comes down to the cruise staff and the cruise director.
Yeah.
I mean, if the cruise director seems a little bit, because I've done Disney and they're either like super chill, and I've come up to him after. I'm like, hey, I made a comment in the show. Is this okay? It just kind of came out. He's like, oh, it was hilarious. Keep going.
Yeah.
But I know the ship I would have just gotten off on a week later, I would have got a little bit of a talking to.
Yeah.
So I think it just kind of depends.
Yeah. No, I mean, everyone's been lovely. I've had a great time doing it. I've worked with them for like a year and a half, and it's my first time cruising. And I am married and I have two daughters, so like they get to come along sometimes and hang out, and that's amazing. So, and I get to be in beautiful places, and I get to meet Mickey.
Well, you know, that he's the one that signs the checks.
That's right.
They say it's the cruise director like giving the review, but it's Mickey giving you the thumbs up or the thumbs down.
Yeah, well, I just pictured him with his checkbook on his nose, like when they sign autographs, like trying to peek through. And
my wife was friends with Mickey for many years, and if you worked at Disney, you know what that means.
Yes.
Ooh.
Mm.
But she can still have Mickey sign things.
Wow.
Me. Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
So if you need anything signed for Mickey, like a check or something.
She's got a direct line.
She spent many hours learning how to learn the Walt alphabet, I think it is.
Oh, is it called the Walt a bit?
Well, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I should know these things.
That's
but,
really funny.
She can still do it.
I'm always fascinated. There's like, that's a whole world of that I don't know. And I've got a little peek in behind, but
even as variety guys on there, like, we don't spend much time with any of the entertainment staff because we're contractors and we're like in a whole separate thing, I think.
Yeah, well, I realized recently that we had the best gig.
Oh, it's so easy. And like, I'll have days where I want to complain. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah,
it's the easy. You're doing a couple shows. You're hanging out. You're getting free food.
Yeah, wherever. I think what made me realize, I saw like other people who work on the ship with like binders and like going to meetings.
They work like 12, 13-hour days.
They work
7 days
super hard.
A week.
And I mean, I put a lot into my show, and I try to work on it while I'm there. But yeah, we got it pretty good.
Yeah,
which is nice. So I'm really happy that they're. They have been happy with me so far.
Yeah, yeah, and they are one of those And I heard the same things going in. They are one of the companies where it's like, if it doesn't go well the first time, they probably won't have you back, or if they don't think you're up to it. And which is, you know, a good and a bad thing, because I've never worked with anybody on I worked with other people on other ships where I was like, yeah, they're okay. And I'm sure people thought about that about me as well, which is totally valid. But everybody I've worked with on a Disney ship has just been stellar in terms of variety performance. They really do a good job.
And they treat you really well, too. They do. So it's really nice. I feel blessed to be part of the team.
I learned working at Disney World where if you just smile, keep your head down, don't yell at anybody, which I did once during a show when some drunken people nearly attacked me. Disney will treat you well. Like, they take care of you, which is good.
Plus, you know the mouse.
I know the mouse. So I could make another joke that I'm not going to, because then it will get me fired from Disney.
This will all be cut out.
I don't edit the podcast, but I have been editing more often because I'll listen to something stupid I say, and I'm like, let's take that out. More Jonathan.
Oh, my.
That's what the people want to hear. They don't want to hear me chat.
My goodness.
Unless it's Mr. King.
We've lost one. We're only down to two listeners now.
But you know what? They already downloaded it, so I don't care.
Oh, okay.
It shows up in the stats, and I'm fine.
Wonderful.
As long as I get those download stats. So what's you're doing? You did the Brooklidge last night. I saw you with the Lampshades with Kate Flannery last night.
Yeah.
Very funny set at Flappers Comedy.
Thank you.
They stick with that name, even though it's a weird name. And they make jokes about it up top with a whole video of all the comedians making fun
of
the
name. Yeah, I was pretty impressed with that, because I'm sure it happens constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every time I've been there, somebody mentions it and how it's a bad name. But
it's awful.
But it was nice. I was glad to be there and flap it up.
Flap it up. And you did the Brooklidge, and all these shows don't matter that I'm saying, because this will come out a couple weeks later.
Yeah, yeah.
But
you missed it.
You missed all of this. Okay. So tune in next year when you're in town in May.
Sure, sure.
But then you're doing Comedy Magic this week as well for the whole week, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of nice when I've been able to, last few times I've come out, been able to work places out here and have a place for friends and fans and other people to see me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been nice. Like I like coming out and being part of the scene, even mm-hmm. though I'm not out here all the time.
I guess we should jump back. If you can give me like a 3-minute bio about yourself. I do no research on the show, but I've seen you perform many times, and
sure.
It's very entertaining.
I'm from Earth.
Oh, what's that like? It's actually amazing. I feel like half the people in this country are not from Earth, but that's okay.
It's out of this world. Am I right?
Oh. And hold for applause.
please edit that out.
1739, edit out. Got it.
I started in magic when I was a kid. I was like, 12 or 13, like a lot of us. I feel like I learned a few tricks. Somebody asked me to do their birthday party. I said, okay. And I did that, and people kept asking. So I'm now 36, so I've been doing it a long time. But yes, it's always been my full-time job. I've luckily never had to do anything else. And I do a lot of, perform at a lot of colleges. I'm an opening act for a dog show at Taurus Theaters.
Mutt's Gone Nuts.
Mutt's Gone Nuts.
Which is the greatest name for a show.
it really sounds like
if you're writing a sketch comedy act.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
A show that's, but it seems pretty good.
It's really good, actually.
I watch videos, it's really funny.
It's wonderful. And it's one of those things that if my name was on the marquee, people might be like, oh, maybe we'll go see this comedy thing. But there's way more people who love dogs.
Yeah.
That are just like, I like dogs. And then they come out. So we've actually sold out. We had 25 theaters this spring, and we sold out a lot of our shows. So I get to perform in beautiful theaters because of that.
The photos are amazing.
Yeah, it's great. So like friends of mine, we've been friends for a long time. And when they started doing this tour, they asked if I would kind of join along, and they're open to my weird ideas, which is really fun. So I just bring up stuff like, what if I crawled out of a dog crate? And they're like, that's sure. So then we do that.
Which we should explain. You're also a contortionist.
I am a contortionist.
If we haven't mentioned this.
Sure, yeah. Well, so circling back. So I did magic for years, and then I started putting in other skills along the way. At one point when I was a teenager, I'm like, I'm going to be a sideshow guy. And I would like learn to walk on glass and nail things in my face and eat fire. Mm-hmm. And then quickly realized.
As you do.
You learn that when you're 18. And you're like, this is my life.
And that's where you met your wife.
Exactly. So I did that for a long time and realized after I burnt my lips one time on eating fire, I was like, yeah, I could just write some jokes.
I'm good.
So I started writing more jokes, and
I'll see people at the Booby Trap show like lift things with their nipples or their earlobes, like giant cinder blocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, that's impressive, but you could just write a joke.
Yeah, it's a different skill set for sure. You really gotta love it.
Yeah.
but those were like my heroes, and actually when I was in high school, there seemed to be a lot of like sideshow interest. I think it was the Jim Rose sideshow was touring a lot of concerts, and there was a lot of I remember like on TLC there would be a lot of documentaries or just like shows about, hey, freaks, let's
look,
check out some
weirdos.
Freaks.
Yeah.
And I just got into it. Like I was like, that's gonna be me. And then I was like bendy, so I started putting contortion tricks in the show. Mm-hmm. So now my show is like a variety of talents. It's my little talent show. So I kind of come out and there's a lot of audience interaction. I play with everyday objects like cheese and toilet seats and not at the same time.
They're both cleaned.
They're both clean, yeah. and the cheese is sealed for your protection. And so that's kind of my show now. It's kind of hard to describe. I have a hard time describing it, so I don't know what other people think, but I just kind of tell people it's a comedy contortion and stunt show.
Mm-hmm. And your tag, flexible comedy, I think is perfect.
Oh, that's great. Oh, yeah, thank you. I always think about changing things, but everything is now at flexible comedy, and it's hard to...
I change my tag every 3 months, I feel, but yeah, I know what you mean. You want something that describes it, but at the same time keeps it open so people don't, like... pigeonholed you to one specific thing?
Yeah, well, that's when I was doing magic and I wanted to start doing colleges and things, I was like, I don't think I should say magic because there's a lot of other magicians vying for these same things. So that's when I was kind of first of like, maybe I should be something else. And I think about, you know, tags and all that kind of stuff a lot and marketing, and I don't know if other people care as much. Like, I don't know if it matters, but in my head it does. So I'm always like, I'm going to buy this domain when this will work for me.
You put, like, at least in my case, you'll just put, like, hours and hours of work into, like, figuring out the right tag. Or, like, I'm constantly reworking my website. I'm like, let's move this picture over here. It'll make it prettier, and we'll add this quote here. And then you feel like nothing happens. And then you'll get, like, a call from a client, like, this past weekend of, like, I did a little strolling gig. And, they're like, yeah, we really loved your website. And you just like feel this vindication of, yes, all the hours I put
in. It's working. Yeah, I went to school for art. I went for art education. And I did a lot of design and marketing and that kind of work
cool.
as well. So I get really into aesthetics and how my things look. And so I try to make the stuff I put out there look pretty. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that effort... helps.
I think it looks gorgeous.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Always putting out the stuff on the tour dates and whatnot on the Instagram, and it's always very entertaining. And
thanks. Yeah, I tried. Yeah, use my Photoshop skills to to make silly.
I learned how to use Photoshop in high school, and it's the single best in multimedia class. Mr. Elliot, thank you. Learned how to use Photoshop and like well enough to where I can pull it off, you know, and make it look like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, it's a great skill. It's like it is show business. So learning that side of it is super important.
Yeah, it's kind of mind blowing to me when guys tell me they have people pay people to do it. I was like, oh, you could just do this yourself.
Yeah, right.
But maybe having your background in art or having a concept of marketing or composition and whatnot, it doesn't come naturally for everybody, so maybe that's it too.
Yeah, I guess I'm just lucky that I started in high school too. A friend of mine gave me a pirated version of Photoshop. I now pay for it.
I think I do. I don't know.
I was just using like pirated versions, mm-hmm. and then at some point I was like, okay, I can spend money on this. Like, I should. Like, I should give back to Photoshop. Adobe needs some
Adobe,
of my money.
I feel bad. Yeah, if I've ever ripped off Adobe. I don't feel bad. I use Final Cut, and I don't feel bad ripping off Final Cut. Not that I have. I use a paid
allegedly.
Version. But I'm like, Apple has enough money. They can give me this editing software for free.
Yeah, no, it's so I'm lucky. I learned that beforehand. When I was in school, I started working on, like, Illustrator and things. So mm-hmm. I'm able to make things look nice, and I think that does help with a lot of what we do.
It's exhausting to do, and I wish I could had the money to pay somebody to do it. But at the same time, you have so much downtime when you travel.
On the cruises, that's when I do a lot of that.
You have no excuse not to be like, if I know I'm not going to have internet, I'll download, okay, I need this information, great. And then when I'm traveling, I'll figure out these little tags or these little photo things that you can post or let people know about shows or... Oh, that's okay. You can put that on the mic.
No, I didn't want to. We could edit that out.
We're not like NPR. We don't have a cough button.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Cool. I know. I guess I could have flipped the switch.
Oh, yours does have a switch. Mine does not.
Now it's my burp switch.
That's okay.
Bilch knob.
We're getting that in the budget. Once we get some more donations from Mr. King, we'll add that in.
The cough button. That's great.
So what's next? You've done the... TV, you've done the ships, you've done colleges. What do you think is next on the docket for you? How do you
mayor of Dover, Delaware?
They were looking for a mayor that can contort.
That's right. That's he's flexible. That's what my campaign
like, oh, wow.
poster.
And you're just like going up against this very large man. You're like, clearly, he's not flexible.
That's right.
Also, he doesn't love children.
And I've never been to Dover. seems lovely. I don't know. It's just kind of plugging away. My goal for the longest time was just to make a living doing this, and
you've done that.
I've been doing that since 2004, and I'm just happy to kind of keep plugging away at that and just trying to test out new things. Like, I was doing a lot of colleges for a while. I was doing between 20 and 40 a semester for mm-hmm. a little while.
You're doing the NACA?
NACA and things. So yeah, I did that for a long time, and they're a mixed bag. Sometimes you have really great shows and beautiful venues, and then sometimes you're in a cafeteria performing next to a soda machine.
And they forgot to advertise.
And no one knows about it. So I feel like I can make something work in all those situations. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of like daytime shows that we call them nooners in the biz. And if you get a nooner, like you never know what's going to how it's going to go. Like, you kind of going into it, you're like, this could go either way.
Yeah.
But I have a street performing background, so I am able to use some of those skills to create a good show, which I'm like so happy I have an ability to build a crowd and mm-hmm. and make things happen. But I can't imagine being like a stand-up, just a straight stand-up in those situations, because it just seems like instant death. Like, no one's paying attention, and they're ordering, you know, on the intercom, they're like, order number 43. And you're like, oh, God.
Your cheese sticks are done.
Yeah, exactly. Cheese sticks.
I ordered.
Mountain Dew.
Are these vegan, gluten-free?
Order 43.
Like that. I'll take that as a no. Pete Holmes. Do you watch Pete Holmes' show, Crashing?
Yes.
The last episode was him booking a gig through NACA and performing
yes.
in a cafeteria. And he's just like having a blast. And my favorite part is the 18-year-old child who booked him comes up and go, you've done 60 minutes. You can be done. And he's having so much fun. He goes, okay, I'll keep going a little bit longer.
It's very accurate, that show. The NACA episode in particular. I've done NACA for...
The only thing that's not accurate is he books a showcase immediately.
Yes. Okay.
And I've never booked a friggin' showcase.
Sure. That, yeah. It's a little... Some things are a little too easy for him.
Yeah.
But,
he gets on Rachel Ray pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's a great show, and I love it.
Yes, I guess they couldn't have like four seasons of him struggling to get a showcase.
Yeah, just him like crying in a bedroom.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I can't watch the show anymore. but when they just being at NACA, it was pretty accurate to what
totally.
That experience is like, and because you're dealing with a lot of students who are 18 to 20, and they're trying
kids.
To figure out who they are and what's appropriate and what's PC and what they feel about everything and and what they're going to do with their lives, mm-hmm. And what, you know, and their opinions and everything. So it's definitely a different audience. I think a lot of people, when they hear college shows, they're like, that must be crazy, like Animal House. And it's not like that at all.
No, you have to do a PG show, I think, a lot of the time.
Most of the time, that's what they're looking for, is something that's a little more clean. Mm-hmm. There's exceptions to that. Some schools won't care, or they'll have certain events where, you know, they'll bring in somebody who, like a, I don't know, Bill Burr or something like that, who's not going to pull back any punches. But typically, they want something that's a little more clean, and it's usually an alternative event on like a Thursday night versus like people going out and drinking and getting crazy and having that kind of college experience. So
this is a dry campus.
Yeah, right.
So my art school would always say, Columbia, this is a dry campus, as the kids like shoving bottles into the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But they're
Have you done colleges at all?
I've done a handful. Yeah, I had my agent. I think we worked together with the same corporate agent, but they occasionally book me in colleges. But,
okay.
I've submitted for the showcase at NACA and have not gotten it. And I just didn't think it was really worth it to go to a NACA without a showcase.
It's
hit or miss.
It could be hit or miss. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even sometimes you book a showcase and then
still nobody books.
Yeah, like sometimes it's I've done it, booked a showcase and done really well, and I booked the showcase and done the same exact thing and it didn't go as well, like as far as booking. So you just never know. Mm-hmm. They might not be looking for you at that time, or like I did one in the fall and I had a busy spring schedule already, so like they were looking for dates that I was already booked. So now it's like trying to like, how do we get these, my agent's trying to work to get those clients that wanted me in the spring now to book in the fall.
And, yeah.
It's a good problem to have for sure. Mm-hmm. But I just trying to balance that and figure that out. You never know. Like I was thrilled I got a showcase and I was like, oh great, this will all work out. And I've done a few of those shows and now I'm like kind of waiting for more things to fall into place. And it's changing a lot too. When I first was there, I would hear stories from the 90s, like Carrot Top came and he booked 150 shows.
Yeah, 80s, 90s. I want to go back to then and do NACA.
Yeah,
because like, nobody knew about it then.
Right, yeah, it was pretty quiet. And now it's, if any magicians are out there listening, it's very magician heavy.
Yeah, I think that's also the other reason I was like, I'm not going to stand out. There's
a lot of magicians. So yeah.
Your act stands out very well because you're doing so many different things, which is awesome.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I kind of changed my marketing to do that.
Sure.
Like when I noticed that problem immediately and was like,
yeah.
Actually, my first year of doing NACA, I was in my booth and I was doing card tricks to just try to like show people this is, I do some magic, you know? And then across from me was another magician and he was trying to have like a dueling banjos style, like cardistry off. It was really bizarre. Like I played because I was just kind of shuffling and doing stuff, and then he would do the same thing and like trying to intimidate me or something.
Yeah,
and he wanted to go back and forth doing like different card moves, and I was like, this is weird.
I don't want to be a part of this.
That's right. Why can't I keep my eyes off him?
Yeah. Just walking around those showrooms are so strange. And going back to crashing, they capture it very well.
For sure. Yeah. No. They. Yeah. It's. I watched it, and my agent watched it, and she's like, "They nailed it. Nailed it."
It's getting harder and harder to watch shows. Like I'm watching the show Barry right now.
Yes. Have you watched it? Sure.
So good. But you know, it's all about acting, which is, you know, a lot of stuff my wife has been going through being an actor here in LA. And stuff I did before I came to LA, I was doing more acting stuff, and it's kind of like painful to watch. But
you're like too close to it. I know.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's a different experience for people who are outside of the business. Mm-hmm. But I've done that too, where I was watching Adam Carolla's movie, where he's like a struggling road comic, basically. Mm-hmm. Like he was in a duo, and his like partner went off to do a late night show. It's very, very much like him and Jimmy Kimmel, I guess. But and then he's got to go out and do these road. I think it's called Road Hard. That's the name of it.
Okay.
And I was watching it with a friend of mine, and we were both in a crappy hotel doing comedy gigs, and it was like a little too real. We're like, oh god, this is our life. You know.
Yeah, I can't. I don't listen to as many podcasts as I used to. Like when I lived in Florida, I lived off podcasts. But it's funny. Like the more not even the word successful is not the word I'm going to use, but the more busy you get, you're like, yeah, I want to learn about history. I want to learn about art.
Well, I think learning about other things outside of the business is good too, just because it gives you more of a worldly sense. And so when you're writing stuff, you're like, oh, I'm going to make a joke about Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why I sometimes take a break from doing this, because it's like, oh, I've said everything I need to say right now about this job. And
sure.
I think it gets repetitive, and I want it to be interesting for people, and I want it to be interesting for me too. So I've been lucky to interview people such as yourself to get it away from, although I keep bringing it back to me, so I'm going to...
No, Well, we know each other a bit. We've hung out a few times, but I don't know everything about you.
Well, I keep those for the private podcast conversations.
Gotcha.
That's in a separate booth over even crappier coffee.
Oh, great. How many tattoos do you have?
Seven, but they're all invisible.
Okay.
Only with black light.
Oh, black light. Wow, I didn't know that technology existed.
It does, yeah. It's really hard to get off, though, if you want to get one removed.
Unbelievable. It's four of them are the Golden Girls.
Actually, just three.
Okay. Oh, wow. No Blanche.
Wasn't a fan of Blanche. She was fine. Yeah, but so what is... we always ask best gig stories. You've told some great gig stories. The more and more well-known people I interview, I'm realizing I can't really ask about good stories, because you've done Montreal, you've done Foolus, you've done these cool gigs. What about worst gig stories? I'm always fascinated by things that have just fallen apart and how you've handled it.
Sure. I've had plenty of bad things happen.
Have you ever gotten on stage, because your character is so unique and you commit to it so well, have you ever gotten on stage and people just are like not vibing with it?
Oh yeah, that happens a lot. Especially I've been in several situations where it's kind of a small audience, or like I feel like my character it's definitely weird and abnormal.
But so, in a great way.
Yeah, I love doing it. For some reason I've just stuck with it despite everything else. Like I remember I started street performing in college in Baltimore. They have like an Inner Harbor area there, and then they have a program. Basically, you audition for this program, you get to work at this amphitheater, and you can. It's one of the best street performing pitches like in the world, especially in the U.S. So I don't know what I was going with this.
Worst gig story or bad experience?
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking like going there and trying to learn how to be a street performer, I feel like I easily could have fallen into like, I'm going to do what everyone else does because this will make me the most money in my hat at the end. Mm. But for some reason, something in me told me like, don't worry about the money, like work on the show and stay true to myself and be original. This isn't a bad gig story, but I'll tell you about the first time I did it. But
no, that's fine.
So I don't know why, there was no reason for it, but for some reason I knew being original was more important than money at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was also in my 20s and I lived on very little, and that was really nice. So I kind of figured out how to do a street show and be true to what I wanted to be doing. My first few shows there, I had like a mannequin for a while that had the arms were juggling clubs with like ladies' gloves on them and things, and I would dance with the mannequin, and like I did this underwater escape where I would be chained up, and she had like the chains in her bra, and like I would pull the chains, and she was like the chain with that you would get at like a gas station. I'm trying to remember how this went. But I would do an underwater escape where someone would just hold water over my head and I would try to escape from these chains. So I would just do like bizarre things that wouldn't work anywhere, but I was trying to do it at like one of the hardest venues where people could just leave. So, but the first time I auditioned and I did the street performing program there, I auditioned in the spring and it went really well. Like there was an audience there. There was... yeah, probably like 300-400 people, like kind of already set up. And I remember them playing Getting Jiggy with It, and I kind of came out and I danced to that, like as I was setting up. And I planned this audition. I had to do like 10 minutes, and it like went really well. I got in the program. I was like so excited that I'm going to be a street performer. You know, like I was so excited. And then the next time I went, I brought my then girlfriend, now wife, and I struggled for 3 hours trying to build a crowd. Mm. I made like $10 and it was like brutal, just flop sweat for for 3 hours, made no money, could barely pull off a show. And
Stuck with you.
She did. She did. She saw the potential. But she did say to me, well, at least we don't have to do that again, like when we were heading home. Because I also remember I made $10 and parking cost $20. And for some reason I was just like, no, I got to figure this out. And like it was just like a challenge for mm-hmm. me. And doing that made me so much better. Like I learned about how to build a crowd and how to hold people. And how, I don't know, there's a lot of skills. Like, you're dealing with the public who doesn't know there's going to be a show.
Yeah, that's the toughest thing.
Yeah, and it's like they're not expecting it. They're on their way to do something else. They want to go to the Cheesecake Factory that they've been talking about all day, and they're waiting. And it was one of those things, I kind of stuck with it, and I learned a lot. And street performing was one of the things that sort of took me to do more international things. There's like a whole street performing busker circuit of festivals in Canada and through Europe and Australia and New Zealand, and I've been invited to do a lot of those festivals all over the place. And so it was like one of those things it was a bad experience at first where I struggled and did nothing. And actually another time there was another performer who was on after me. I'd struggled again for 3 hours trying to get a crowd and make a show happen. And it's an Australian guy. He's a legendary street performer named Bike Boy. And he came up to me and said, good show, yeah? And I was like, ugh. And he started up a chainsaw, and immediately 500 people were surrounding him. And he, like, had a huge crowd and was doing a show. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of those, like, humbling moments that now looking back, I don't street perform as much. And it's kind of... I see the skills that gave me, mm-hmm. and they do come in handy when in some other situations. But also, I also know it's not going to be that bad.
Yeah.
Again, like that's kind of like the worst it's been. And like, I'm like, okay, at least I'm not doing that. It kind of keeps me pushing forward and doing my own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I did paid street performing at Disney for many years, but man, that the ability to...
that was Mr. King.
Mr. King just came in for a second. He dropped off another $20.
He's here. Oh, totally getting in the castle.
The ability to build a crowd and keep them is a skill that, you know, you can't really be taught. You just have to figure that out.
Yeah.
And I still do Downtown Disney once a month, and it's funny, the dread doesn't go away of like, well, I hope there's a crowd. I hope I can turn it on this time and build a crowd, because sometimes you just don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors too. I was talking to a friend last night about it, where you'll have a great show and then you don't make a great hat at the end, and that makes it a bad show. And then you'll have a bad show, and the hat will be good, and you're like, but it's still a bad show because you don't feel good about it. Mm-hmm. But okay, I made money, whatever. And then you can have a great show and then make money too, which is like the best of both worlds. But that doesn't happen. And then immediately after, you'll have your worst show. So it's like a range of emotions that you go through on a day of street performing is a lot.
The last street show I did was last month at Disney, Downtown Disney, and audience was pretty good, having fun, but there was some crazy 12-year-old female child that was just like shouting at me.
Yeah.
And wanted to come up on stage. I brought her up. I thought I could make it work. I'm like, oh no, okay, just go back and finish the show. And at the end, the audience is applauding, and then she just starts screaming at me, walks towards me, like over the rope, picks up my balloon, and smacks me in the face with it really hard.
Yeah.
And my Disney manager is just sitting there watching this going, you know, raises his shoulders, goes, eh, what can you do? I'm like, where are the parents?
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, anyway, so street performing, that, and then worst gig were you going to go into? Or was that kind of it?
Okay, I guess that's it, yeah. I mean, I've had... I'm bad at remembering things. Usually when I'm
That's
talking,
good.
Like
good for you.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm
bad. I remember all my terrible gigs.
I guess it is good. Maybe that is a blessing. Because I kind of forget those really rough ones. But something will trigger that, like in a show. But I try to learn from those too. I try to turn them into a positive as much as possible. And
yeah.
And hopefully next time it turns out better. But yeah, so far so good with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, we're at the 45-minute mark. I had other things I was going to ask, but I think we covered a lot. Any parting advice you want to give to the young aspiring contortionists / fire eaters out there?
I think two things that really helped me were, one, keep a notebook.
Yeah, that does a lot.
Ryan Pilling, he's a magician who's in Canada, who's really great. I met him when I was about 18 at a magic convention, and he was writing ideas down in a notebook, and I was like, oh, that's a great idea. Why didn't I do that? So I just started writing down every idea, no matter how dumb, no judgment in my notebook, just kind of write down stuff.
Sure, yeah. Steve Martin mentions that in his book, Boring Standing Up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, reading that too, just how detailed and he was with that, and how diligent he was keeping his notes.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, and then I'll just kind of revisit those. Right now I'm using my phone, and I'm just kind of going through that and like, oh, that joke might work, or mm-hmm. oh, that joke will never work, and so I don't edit till I take it to the stage. I just kind of put everything in there and then see what's gonna work later or whatever I feel comfortable with, or see what my talk to text feature, how that worked, if I'm driving and I'm trying to say things. It's like,
yeah, it always misses one little detail. Then you look back at it, you're like, wait, what was I saying?
Yeah, why? Yeah. Why did I say something about a oyster pearl?
Oyster pearl.
So yeah, that was one big thing for me, keeping notebooks and just tracking your ideas, because I'm always thinking, oh, I'll remember that later, and then 5 minutes later it's gone, and that idea has left me forever. The other thing is, be original. I feel like that was one thing I noticed especially in magic. There's a lot of people who just kind of buy tricks and do them as is.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the thing that's really helped me as being a professional performer is just trying to be as unique as possible. I don't have to. I'm just trying to make everything my own. And if there's a joke that seems like a stock line or something else I've heard before, when I started, I was definitely doing a lot of those.
Yeah,
totally. I was just kind of. My act was based on seeing David Williamson or who else? Jeff Hobson, Amazing Jonathan. Those guys were hugely influential, and I just kind of did their act when I was 13. But at some point, I realized, oh, I got to make it my own now.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of look back at that time. I'm happy no one saw it at that time. Just people in my hometown.
I've taken down a lot of old YouTube videos.
Yeah. Well, when I was doing that too, it was before YouTube was a thing. So I wasn't like, here's my my act, and I'm putting it out to the world before it was ready to be seen. And I kind of equate that to learning from the master, like painters. Like when, you would study with Da Vinci or Raphael or whoever, or another Ninja Turtle.
Splinter is my favorite.
Splinter, the famous painter Splinter. You would copy the master works, and so you'd learn from their technique in that sense. So it helped me kind of learn from them and learn timing and learn how to put routines together. But I also knew when it was time to put that away and be myself. And that's taken me way further than what that act that was all stolen material would ever do.
Yeah. It's essential. That's what it is, and I did that for many years too. And still, every once in a while, a stock line will come out of my mouth in the show, and I was like, oh, that's got to go. And
yeah, yeah.
Just because you're trying to do a bit, or you're trying to cover something, and it's like, nope, that's
it's okay. And it's hard. It's harder to do that than to come up with the original stuff versus just, oh, this is a thing and it works, and audiences don't know. And but for me, I think just for having a art background too, is I'm always striving for creativity and originality, and I think that is missing in the variety world a lot, where you're like,
yeah, you see one person, you've seen them all.
Yeah, and it's kind of a bummer. Sometimes I've seen people who I've heard of for years, and then I see their act, and I'm like, oh, that's this guy's deal or whatever. It's kind of a bummer to find out. Oh, okay. But then it's also when you see those people who are an individual, like a Rob Zabrecki or
yeah,
our buddy Lindsay Benner.
Yeah, she's likes, amazing.
Yeah, or Puddles, or like all these amazing acts that they're just in a whole different category, mm-hmm. and they've just kind of elevated what we do into an art form versus like just being like a craft, I guess.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot in terms of wanting to just focus on pushing towards that level. But it is tough because you and I are doing more mainstream gigs like colleges and cruise ships. They're not.
Yeah.
So I think going back to me complimenting you on your alt comedy stuff, you've discovered something that works, you know, in many cases universally, which is really cool to tap into.
Yeah. And
it's hard to do.
And that wasn't by design. It just kind of worked out that way,
yeah.
that I can do weird stuff for a corporate gig that'll also work for a family audience. And, mm-hmm. There might be small adjustments, you know, depending on where I'm performing, but kind of the stuff I do for a family audience is also the stuff I would do just for adults.
Yeah.
And that, again, it wasn't on purpose. It just kind of worked out that way. And then, yeah, so now I'm trying to develop things that might be more specific for different venues. But,
sure.
But it is nice when there's those certain things that kind of come along that are like, oh, this works for everybody. And we're on different levels, too, which mm-hmm. I also like. That's one thing with the dog show is I can do jokes that are subtle for... example. So I have a bit where I come out in a dog suit. I play Seamus, their new puppy Seamus, and they show off like Seamus's talents and things like that. So one of Seamus's talents is he does impressions. So Scott will ask Seamus, me, you know, oh, do Christopher Walken's dog, and I go bow, wow, you know, and. The adults laugh because they know who Christopher Walken mm-hmm. is, and then the kids laugh because I'm doing a funny voice.
Yep.
And I love when there's material like that that reaches one audience on different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's almost like a Shrek movie where
yeah. Well, I go back to Aladdin. You know, like
sure.
Robin Williams doing all those bit like I can't believe it. I'm losing to a rug. I didn't know that he was doing Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah,
I just
yeah.
knew that was funny.
It's a funny voice. Yeah. Yeah. There's yeah, and you watch those things now, and you're like, oh my gosh, I missed all those things.
Yeah.
Or watching Ghostbusters when you were a kid versus now, and you're like, oh, there's some dirty jokes in here. Like I had no idea this went over your head.
Same with the Animaniacs. If you ever watch anime, it's a very dirty show. So, and Rocko's Modern Life, all those.
Yeah.
They're just doing bits that were geared for adults could get, but the kids like went over their heads, and I think that's kind of fascinating.
I like it. Well, I have two kids; they're 2 and 5, so I see there's certain shows that they watch I'm not interested in at all. Like, Nick, I don't know if I can give a great example right now. I was gonna say Caillou, but we've never watched
that. There's a lot that aren't. I feel like the only ones that were good are Phineas and Ferb, and then there's a new one called Milo. Murphy's Law is great.
Oh, okay,
by the same people. It's both Disney shows.
I've heard great things about Phineas and Ferb. My kids kind of aren't at Phineas and Ferb age, I think, yet, but somebody was just telling me
about that. I think with your personality, they'll enjoy it.
Okay, yeah, I'll check it
funny.
Out. Yeah, I just like it's fun when you can see things that entertain different people and on different levels. Even like watching Pee Wee's Playhouse growing up.
Totally, yeah.
I feel like my parents could watch that and kind of like like snicker at things.
Well, I mean, happening. It started as an adult show and they made it a kid show.
Right.
But there's still plenty. Like we watch the Pee Wee's Christmas special every year religiously, and there's so many adult jokes in that.
Wow. Yes, actually, I've never seen that. I need to watch it.
Watch it.
Okay.
Everybody, Whoopi Goldberg shows up.
Wow.
Charo shows up.
Wow. Coochie coochie.
Happy birthday. I can't even do it.
She's still working.
Did she's
you know
still
that?
Killing it.
She's like, yeah, she does like her guitar. Like she plays like the, I can't remember kind of guitar. But she plays guitar and sings. And
she sings and plays guitar in that too.
She's, yeah, she's amazing.
Still a babe.
Coochie coochie.
Well, that's good. That's we could go on for hours, but I don't want to keep you too long. Thank you for stopping by on this lovely podcast.
Of course. I can't wait for this coffee.
Oh, I was just informed that they were out. He's leaving right now. He's smashing my laptop. he's taking up sound canceling devices and making noise with him. I don't know how that works. This is the first destructive podcast we've had. All right, thanks, buddy. Thanks for doing this.
Yes, good to see you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at 2magicians1mic. If you would like to be a producer and support the show with a small donation, you can do so on the website twomagicians1mic.com. And please take 30 seconds to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Have a great day.